Next, I will invite Ms. Cheryl Abrahams up to the podium. She is substituting for Dr. Miriam Labak, and she will engage us in breastfeeding for social justice and human rights, addressing racial disparities. Cheryl.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Cheryl Abrahams, and as you've just heard, I am a last-minute substitution for Dr. Miriam Labak. So I will try not to shortchange you on content. However, I do apologize in advance if the delivery seems a little clunky. But I should tell you a little bit about myself. I have an MPH degree from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill from the Department of Maternal and Child Health. And I am currently employed there as a research and development consultant at the Carolina Global Breastfeeding Institute. First of all, I'd like to say that neither Miriam Labak nor myself have any financial conflicts of interest to disclose. However, we would like to acknowledge that some of the studies that I'll be discussing as part of this presentation were supported in part by the Carolina Global Breastfeeding Institute Endowment, the Kate B. Reynolds Charitable Trust, the John Rex Endowment, the Centers for Disease Control, as well as the North Carolina Tracks Institute. And a number of the studies that I'm discussing were carried out by CGBI staff, faculty, and various affiliates and students. So basically what I'm going to be doing is discussing the association of low breastfeeding rates as well as low social support for optimal breastfeeding among minority communities in North Carolina, and the association of those factors with preventable maternal and child, poor maternal and child health outcomes and preventable maternal and child diseases, and as well as in North Carolina specifically, as well as what the Institute is doing to address these. So I'll start by giving you just a little bit of background. For any of you who are familiar with the topic area, you'll know that lack of breastfeeding or less than optimal breastfeeding, meaning breastfeeding that's not happening according to AAP and WHO and recommendations of other professional societies, significantly increases the risk of a number of acute and chronic diseases in both mother and child. And these include obesity, type 1 and 2 diabetes, breast and other cancers, as well as the risk of childhood infections and hospitalizations. And many of you may also know that breastfeeding is reported at lower rates among African American communities. Clients of the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, known as WIC, and as well as among women in the Southeast and among women of lower educational attainments and lower socioeconomic status. I'm gonna grab my water here. And the CGBI, knowing all of these factors, is determined to catalyze change in North Carolina, both for social justice and for health reasons. Okay, so I'll just touch briefly on the methods that went into this presentation. We looked both at original research that CGBI and its affiliates have conducted, as well as research, literature reviews for research that have been conducted in other settings by other researchers, and tried to apply those findings to known rates of breastfeeding and known breastfeeding disparities within North Carolina, as well as known disparities in various maternal and child health outcomes. And to sort of arrange this data to set the stage for recognition of some of these associations by stakeholders and decision makers, both in North Carolina and nationally. So first of all, how are we doing in North Carolina? They call it the old North State in some cases. So we see that given sort of numerous measures of breastfeeding, including breastfeeding initiation and various measures of breastfeeding duration, as well as measures of exclusive breastfeeding, because we know that most professional associations concerned with maternal and child health do recommend that infants be exclusively breastfed for the first 6 months of life. So both measures of any breastfeeding, breastfeeding duration, as well as exclusive breastfeeding, we see that North Carolina falls below U.S. averages, as well as falling below U.S. Healthy People 2010 goals. And if we look at breastfeeding discontinuation in North Carolina, we see that there are significant disparities amongst various racial and ethnic groups. And if we look at it in a slightly different way, this is actually breastfeeding continuation. If we look at it as discontinuation, we'll see that a lot of these groups, there are disparities in initiation, and then a lot of these groups are actually sort of falling off at the same rates. So what this graph is telling us is sort of when women are discontinuing breastfeeding, and that gives us a little bit of insight into where some of the barriers might be lying. For example, we see that African-American women are less likely to initiate breastfeeding initially than white women or Hispanic women. And we'll see that, however, they seem to be sort of falling off at the same rates. For example, a lot of women are falling off in this 3 to 6 month period when a lot of women need to go back to work. And we'll see that by the time we get to 1 year, that very few women are actually continuing any breastfeeding at 1 year. Okay. So what we've done here is to identify low breastfeeding rates as well as rates of illness and various morbidity and mortality measures that are known to be related to breastfeeding in both the African American and low wealth populations within North Carolina. And basically what we're doing is looking at the association between disparities in breastfeeding rates and low social support for breastfeeding and various infant mortality rates. So you can see here that if we look at the infant mortality rate in both white and black populations in North Carolina, as well as the rates of breastfeeding initiation, we see sort of similar disparities with African American populations within North Carolina experiencing both significantly lower breastfeeding rates as well as significantly higher infant mortality rates. So I'll just sort of highlight those. We have the breastfeeding rates, the disparities in breastfeeding rates right there. And then we have the very significant disparities in infant mortality rates. And both measures are higher than the US averages, it should be noted. And this is just sort of a picture of breastfeeding initiation by county in North Carolina. And Miriam asked me to, in particular, draw your attention to a few of those counties. Right there in the middle, we see Nash, Edgecombe, and Pitt. With Edgecombe County being a predominantly African American, having a predominantly African American population, and we see that those are some very low breastfeeding rates right there. Whereas two counties that are immediately adjacent to it, Nash and Pitt, having much higher breastfeeding rates, and we see that those counties have significant different demographics, with Pitt County having a large Hispanic population and Nash County having a very large white population. So we're seeing in a lot of these cases that the breastfeeding rates really are tracking by the demographic proportion of the county itself. Okay, and we've sort of already covered this. And sort of what we can tell from these is that we see that the major causes of infant death in North Carolina include causes due to prematurity and low birth weight, as well as sudden infant death syndrome, which does have an association with breastfeeding, with exclusively breastfeeding infants shown to be at significantly lower risk of SIDS than other infants, as well as respiratory diseases and sepsis. And breastfeeding has been shown to be related to all four of these causes. So that tells us that the causes of preventable infant mortality in North Carolina are, for the most part, causes that are all related to breastfeeding. So we have a significant public health opportunity here. And we also know that minority infants have a disproportionate percentage of deaths from these causes, as well as a disproportionate percentage of lower breastfeeding rates. So basically, the conclusion here is that lack of breastfeeding may well account for a significant proportion of the excess mortality among minority infants. And if we looked at, sort of tried to estimate the number of deaths that could actually be averted by breastfeeding, and to say that if all women in North Carolina were supported to and enabled to breastfeed optimally, an estimated 75 to 150 deaths might be averted annually, and this would bring North Carolina's infant mortality rates much closer to the U.S. average. And if we look at it, sort of look at it in terms of disability-adjusted life years, our calculations tell us that 6 months of any breastfeeding would prevent about 33 years of disability or illness per 1,000 persons per year. And that sort of translates to more than 250,000 unnecessary years of illness and reduced productivity being created annually in the state due to limited breastfeeding. Okay. And I think it's important to note here, particularly within a panel on social justice, that lower breastfeeding rates in the U.S. Are really not an issue of individual level behavior change, or if they are, there is only a certain amount of progress that would be made through individual level behavior change. Particularly if we look at the ability of women to fulfill their breastfeeding intentions. So sort of if we look at women's intentions to breastfeed and what women are actually able to do as far as breastfeeding, we see that there are large differences. And that's due to a number of social and environmental factors that are preventing women from being able to fulfill their intentions. So it's important here to look at some of the social and environmental factors that are contributing to these issues. And these are some results of a study. It was sort of a pilot study, so it certainly by no means presents a comprehensive picture of the WIC program but within North Carolina. But if we look at low-income women who are participating in the WIC program in North Carolina and looking at the breastfeeding services that are available to them on a county level, we see that there are actually inequities in the types of breastfeeding support services that are available through WIC, and that these inequities are associated with demographic compositions of various counties in North Carolina. So in other words, if you look at which counties have high African American populations, which counties have high Hispanic or high white populations, you'll see that the breastfeeding support services vary in a significant way. So this basically just shows you some of the results of logistic regression, telling us the likelihood of offering certain breastfeeding support services by the demographic makeup of the county. And these are telling us that having a high Hispanic proportion in a county is significantly associated with the likelihood of having certain support services, and having higher African American populations is associated with a reduced likelihood of having certain support services. So this is sort of an important area for improvement, and it's sort of a call to action perhaps for those of us who have influence on some of the state support services that are available to women to try to help them meet their breastfeeding intentions. And in addition, there's been the CGBI has been involved in also qualitative research within African American faith-based communities in North Carolina. And this has allowed us to get some information on the differences that are in information that are available to various populations. So for example, black women within focus group studies, it came out that black women tended not to be aware of breastfeeding advantages, at least not to the extent that white women were. And they tended to actually only know about the health benefits to infants, whereas white women tended to be more aware of some of the health benefits that are available to mothers who breastfeed for longer durations. And we've just heard about some disparities in breast cancer rates, and so I'll just add just a little bit to that from a breastfeeding perspective. And a study by Robert Milliken and his team at the University of North Carolina, in which Dr. Lobach participated, showed that a longer duration of breastfeeding, increasing numbers of children breastfed, as well as the sort of increasing number of months breastfeeding per child, were each independently associated with a reduced risk of basal-like breast cancer. And that is the type of breast cancer that's highest amongst premenopausal African-American women. So basically, the type of breast cancer that is highest amongst premenopausal African-American women is one of the types of breast cancer that has a strong association with breastfeeding, in other words, whose incidence can be significantly reduced by breastfeeding. And so that's another breastfeeding, sort of achieving higher equity in breastfeeding rates is another way to go about trying to reduce some of the differential morbidity and mortality amongst Black women and other women from breast cancer. The CGBI has also been involved in a community-based participatory research project to increase breastfeeding rates amongst African American women in Durham, North Carolina. And formative research has indicated that many Black women who are trying to seek support for breastfeeding, particularly who are trying to seek information or support from other groups of women, are having trouble finding situations in which they can feel welcome and not feel like an outsider. Several of the community-based support networks that are available actually do not have high proportions of African-American women participating, and so there's an unmet need for further resources in which Black women can feel welcome, and that the businesses that were most likely to be employing Black women in the Durham area were not those businesses who are doing a good job of accommodating lactation. So there are some significant workplace issues that need to be addressed as well. And this, some of this research was actually presented at this meeting on Monday morning by Elizabeth Jensen and Liz Woods, as well as Tamara Rangel-Kulka from the University of North Carolina. And there has also been research presented at this meeting from a study conducted by Paige Hall-Smith of the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. And she has done an intervention study with low-income adolescent mothers in the Greensboro area, many of whom are African-American or Hispanic. And she identified a number of social barriers that these women were facing, including a fear of physical discomfort, time constraints, and lack of support. And based on this, she's developed some working group materials designed specifically for the needs of this population. So I'd like to get a little bit into some cost reduction figures. We're talking a lot about healthcare and its associated costs at this point in the US. So if we say that North Carolina is about average duration of breastfeeding for the US, a little bit lower, but close to the average, and we have about 2.5% of US births within the state. And North Carolina is actually sort of an interesting Dr. Lobach likes to call it a laboratory for the U.S. because we do have an increasingly diverse population in North Carolina. We do have a geographically diverse state, and we do have rates of breastfeeding that in some cases are similar, a little bit lower, but similar to the U.S. rates. So if we look at what we would achieve with 90%, it says 90% compliance, but basically 90% of mothers in North Carolina enabled to breastfeed according to national recommendations. It's estimated that we could save close to $13 billion a year in healthcare costs. So, and this is in the U.S., I'm sorry. So within North Carolina, we'd estimate that improved breastfeeding could save at least $320 million in healthcare costs just in North Carolina alone, and $13 billion a year within the U.S. So the six main issues or themes that have emerged from this talk. One is that health professionals and the public are not fully aware of the risks to women's and children's health associated with lack of breastfeeding. And I use this risk-based terminology because there have been studies of breastfeeding and perceptions towards breastfeeding that have determined that a lot of people within the U.S. see breastfeeding as sort of an optimal behavior. And we say optimal and therefore optional. It's something that we can all sort of hold up on a pedestal, but that people feel that they're not really able to achieve. A lot of us, you know, in our lives are accustomed not to having the optimal car or the optimal house. You know, we're sort of accustomed to doing the best that we can with the resources that we have available. And so by suggesting that breastfeeding is some optimal behavior that only a few can attain, as opposed to suggesting that breastfeeding is a natural and a default behavior compared to which other behaviors carry risks, then that reframing of the issue tends to change perceptions of breastfeeding a little bit. That's why I use that. And the second theme is that women in North Carolina who wish to breastfeed are not achieving their intentions. They're just not being enabled to breastfeed due to the environmental and social factors that they're facing. And then the fourth issue is that among minority groups in particular, there is a need for social support and self-efficacy development, including a need for specialized social marketing approaches, including person-to-person peer counseling, that sort of thing, and initiatives that can target specific subpopulations. And there is a very strong need to address disparities in infant health and mortality through targeted breastfeeding support to selected populations. And these can occur within existing programs such as WIC and Medicaid. And other preventive issues that are related could include birth spacing and issues of providing more social support to mothers. And there are actually many supportive actions that have been identified and that are amenable to some sort of change, either through targeted community action or through legislation or regulation. And that includes workplace issues. So in other words, helping employers to create and maintain more breastfeeding-friendly workplaces, including more break time and more accommodations for mothers who are pumping milk during the workday. As well as more breastfeeding-friendly childcare services in North Carolina, and I suspect the rest of the U.S. also, but certainly in North Carolina, it's been identified that some childcare centers are very reluctant to store and feed express breast milk to children in their care because they see it as almost sort of a biohazard. It's this bodily fluid. They're afraid that, you know, they need to wear gloves, they need to worry about exposure to it, they need to treat it a different way than they might treat infant formula, things like that. So there are initiatives in place to work with child care centers to help them overcome some of the misconceptions they might have about expressed breast milk, as well as to identify ways that they can be more amenable to children who are receiving expressed breast milk during the day. Also, health systems and health worker training. The CGBI is working on some initiatives to promote breastfeeding-friendly healthcare in North Carolina by partnering with hospitals as well as the State Department of Public Health. Some health worker trainings, more social protection informing the public, and also inclusion of breastfeeding initiatives within emergency preparedness, so how breastfeeding can be supported within emergency situations. Okay, and these are some of the these are some programs that are going on within North Carolina. We certainly would not take credit for all of these, but we like to think that some of the issues that have been brought up by some CGBI research have helped to lead to some of the recognition that some of these are needed. So these include the 10-step hospital intervention for hospitals serving low-wealth populations, as well as increased collaboration during this within the state, as well as some other factors. All right, so thank you very much, and we look forward to all of your questions. Oh, and I do have a handout up here for anyone who is interested, and these handouts include Miriam Labak's address if you have any questions you'd like to direct to her, or to me, but to her also. Okay.
Thank you, Cheryl. At this time, I'd like to open the floor for questions. I have written down some myself because we wouldn't want the presenters to escape without having answered just a few, but I would like to start with y'all first in the audience. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. So the question was, there are disparities within the African American and white populations in both breastfeeding and infant mortality. And the question was, Hispanic populations do tend to breastfeed at higher rates. So what do the infant mortality numbers look like within that population? And that is a fantastic question. And unfortunately, I do not have the answer in front of me. It was not included in the analysis that we've done. And I am not fully certain that those numbers have been tabulated by the state for the Hispanic population. I'm trying to think when these numbers were collected. These were for 2009. Yeah, that's something I'd have to get back to you on, because my guess would be that they would be higher than numbers for white infants, but I'm not sure about that. So I'll check and see whether the state is actually using that racial, that ethnic breakdown or not.
Want to continue with the audience, or else I get a chance to quiz our panel? Well, I'm going to address my first question to Giselle. In the case of breast cancer screening, do you think that the overreporting is an issue of health literacy or sample bias or simple recall bias, positive recall bias? What do you think might be the reason?
I believe that it's possible recall bias, and a term that the researchers are using that's called telescoping, where they really think that they had a mammogram the last 2 years, but in reality it was about 3 or 4 years. Because the educators that we used to do the health surveys were women in their communities who were their ages and really related to them, I believe that they fully understood the question that they were answering, especially since we had those that were bilingual. And so, yeah, I think it was a telescoping issue.
Okay. Well, y'all, if you couldn't hear, she believes that the issue is a telescoping issue where the respondent might believe that they've actually had their mammogram in the last 2 years when really it was probably in the last 3, 4, 5 years. So, Dr. Suh, I was wondering, my research works with mental health, and particularly our men and women in uniform and our young adult population. And I was wondering, as you were mentioning that the women, especially in our more rural areas, that there were needs and shortcomings, and that for the sake of the presentation, you had to limit your results to two bullets on one slide. I was wondering if you would care to expand on some of those results that you might find, in particular to the individual needs of women and maybe the shortcomings in the initial VA and community infrastructure supporting those women.
Dr. Thurman's presentation. I wish I had more that I could present that would, you know, be beneficial to the three participants out there, but I'm not sure I'd have anything specific.
Okay. All right. Ms. Abrahams, you mentioned the, in terms of support services for breastfeeding in North Carolina, and I kind of prelude this question with a talk that I went to yesterday, where they were talking about men's health and men's disparities and the effect of men's health on the family, in particular the children's health, and not to mention the women's health. So my question is, what is the role of men in breastfeeding, and how can we help?
Okay, that's that. That's and my voice isn't very loud, so I'll kind of a soft voice. We'll go ahead and use the microphone. That's actually a great question, because the role of men, and particularly of fathers, is a very important issue, and it has been shown that. A father's support for breastfeeding, or a male partner's support of breastfeeding, is predictive of a woman's ability to succeed in breastfeeding. And actually, there was a very interesting poster that I just saw at one of the poster sessions this morning that suggested that women, this is a population of low-income, predominantly minority women, that suggested that comfort level with breastfeeding in front of in addition to spouse, because usually people aren't necessarily uncomfortable breastfeeding in front of the spouse, but the spouse may have certain ideas about breastfeeding that can influence the mother, influence the social support that's available to her. But in addition to support from the spouse, it was How comfortable women felt breastfeeding in front of close relatives as well as friends that helped to determine how long women breastfed. So in addition to the spouse or the male partner, it's actually also people like mothers-in-law and fathers-in-law who probably tend to, and even the woman's own mother and father who may tend to be around shortly after she gives birth or while she's caring for an infant. And it's her comfort breastfeeding in proximity to those people, which in turn is, I think, influenced by those people's attitudes towards breastfeeding. So the family certainly has a very, very important role. And some initiatives within North Carolina have tried to work with, and including some of the community-based and faith-based initiatives, have tried to work with partners as well as with mothers-in-law, mothers and other close relatives, or I should say the baby's grandmothers, to help allow them to be part of the solution. So thanks for that question.
I invite anybody else in the audience to ask any additional questions at this time. Any questions? Well, I do know that we are wrapping up our APHA conference, and I'm sure that folks are making their travel arrangements and or heading to the convention center for the closing ceremony, so I invite you to do the same. At this time, I thank everybody for their attendance to this session, 5192, Strategies Targeted at Women's Health Disparities. I invite you to come up and speak to our presenters if you have any additional questions that you care to ask them. I also invite you to join the Women's Caucus. You can do so by checking the Women's Caucus out online on the APHA website, or membership forms that might be located at the Convention Center. I thank you for your participation in today's session, and I wish you safe travels back to your respective destinations. Thank you.